now tuned in to The Raymundo Show. History in the making. A man with a master plan to inspire, make you laugh, spread love around the world. The Brooklyn Way. Give it up for your host, Raymundo.
Yeah. It's your host, Raymundo. Welcome to my show where we relate, have fun, talk about real shit, and just find ways to be better overall. like my 2K attributes. 2K23 is out right now. But this is episode 36. Follow the leader. Follow the leader, follow the leader. And of course, it's about leadership. We all have there's a way for all of us to find the leader within and take charge of our lives. Well, yeah, but since I ain't fully there, you know how I do things here on the show. You know, I guess somebody who's an expert or living that life every day. But before we get into that, I spit the habit. Let's go.
Let's go.
It's that quote of the day. It's that quote of the day.
So this quote of the day comes from Peter Drucker. Leadership is uplifting a person's vision to high sights, the raising of a person's performance to a higher standard, the building of a personality beyond its normal limitations. And I think it's dope, man, because we all been around those people that got that leadership in them and or that mentor spirit, and they tell you things that get you more excited than the shit you tell yourself. And not too many people got that ability. I would like to think that I do. I'm always speaking positivity, and I'm always trying to make sure people don't go through the same mistakes as me. I also do it here on the podcast. I've learned from some of them. Some of them I'm still working on, but I'm a work in progress, ain't we all? Yo, and I won't lie, in certain parts of my life where I needed to step up, sometimes the person that was like, you know, above me would give me like almost like a little boost of confidence. Like they let me see what I didn't see and help and pretty much help me. Cause you know what happens when someone sees what you don't see, then you kind of like, you got to take a step back and be like, yo, why I don't feel like that about me? You know what I'm saying? Certain people that I've worked with that come to mind. I used to work with this dude named Kirk when I was in the leasing game, and I wasn't doing too good until he came in and just like took it upon himself to put me in the right direction so I could start selling and you know, start making some money so I can. I was living in Miami, you know what I mean? I was getting money, but I wasn't getting money. Sat down and talked to me. I was on some whole other shit in the real estate game. Jonathan Thous, man, he was the office manager. Yo, he was a good salesman. So I don't know if he was really keeping it a buck with me, but he made me feel like I could really be the best real estate agent. Like, he would tell me, like, yo, your personality, everybody loves you. Yeah, you be fucking up. He always kept it a buck, though. He'd be like, yeah, you be fucking up, but you know how to do it. There's times that I would leave the office and I would come back and sell right away, and he would just sit me in the office like, why you playing with your life? Why you playing with your career, man? Like, I remember one time I was going through some, you know, as my real estate career was crumbling towards the end, he sat me down and told me like, yo, you could be the office manager. Like, at some point, you could do so good that you can take my spot. Like, and he had a really top position. Like, I mean, I don't know how his bosses would have felt about that, but, you know, I believed him when he told me, and it made me motivated. Did it last? No, but I feel like real leaders really make you feel like that. Like, they make you really realize your potential and how good you could really be. Yo, so the title comes from when I used to work in the Cordon Bleu. It used to be always Caribbean parties, man, and there's certain songs that just set in my head, like, just will always be with me. And I'm gonna name the three right now. It's 5 cent, 10 cent, dollar. That's my shit. And like the families would get on the line and they would just follow the leader, follow the leader. But one time they let me get on the line and shit, I almost got fired, but it was perfect. Follow the leader. And this is, yo, I heard this song like 3 years before it came out into like radio. But let me jam you, go caress my body. You got me going crazy.
You got me going crazy.
Oh, man. Those were, yo, when you were young, working 7 hours, getting $31. So you had to work like 8 shifts to get a pair of sneakers. But it was great, man. I met a lot of great people, man. Shout out to Scarly, Fito, Coyote. Fuck. I don't want to miss anybody. Rashid, Luis, Javier. But yeah, let's get into it. So here on the Raymundo Show, I wanted to, you know, talk about leadership, also women in leadership. And I got a special guest that embodies that. She's internationally recognized. She's an award-winning educator, TED Talk speaker. She does it all, especially when it comes to the leadership field. She's a voice, and I thought it would be great to have her voice on the Raymundo Show to give us those great gems and stories that help someone listening right now. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to give a warm welcome to Dr. Marisol Capellan.
Yes, thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure. I mean, we've been having this conversation before you introduced me, and I'm already having fun here.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yes, I used to be in university faculty. I used to teach at the University of Miami. I used to teach management and leadership. I'm from the DR, Afro-Latina, immigrant.
Santo Domingo.
What part,
actually?
Well, not El Campo, Santiago, but you know how people say,
Santiago.
Yeah. But you know what? Loving my village. I grew up there and grew up in a barrio. So I know the struggle a lot. My family's still back there. And I came to the U.S. when I was 16. And then, you know, you're here without a family, without anybody. At 17, I became homeless. And I went through a lot when I came to the U.S. So you're seeing like a 17-year-old girl sleeping in a mattress for 2 years in a stranger's home and living in different houses. And I was like, you know what? I have to get my degree, because I need to get out of this situation. I was the first one from my family to come to the United States and get an education in an American university.
Awesome.
So
awesome.
I powered through that and I graduated with honors with my bachelor's degree and then went for my master's, graduated with a master's in leadership with honors. Uh-huh. And then I also became the first one in my whole family with a doctoral degree. So that's why when people introduce me, I'm like, you got to say doctor, because he took me to get here.
I'm going to edit that just because I was, I always like to ask the name because
okay.
I always want to pronounce
okay.
it right.
But, it's okay.
But trust me, I want to be a doctor too. And I can't wait. I want to change my show in the future to the Dr. Ray Show.
Oh, wow. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I will say you will be a doctor. So the first thing, start with that, the way that we say things. So
yeah, exactly. You know what? Yeah. That's crazy. I'm like reading these mind books is like you have to change the way you
speak.
You
have to say it.
Because it changes your actions, right? So
yes.
if I talk like I already have it or it's going to happen, I'm going to move accordingly instead of.
So talking about the mindset. If you don't mind me, you know,
jumping
with this, something that really changed my life, because, you know, you're going through homelessness and you are struggling and you're just like, want to give up. Like there were many times that I went back to the DR and I was like, I'm not going back. I'm not going back to the US. Like it's terrible. In terms of like, I was working at McDonald's. I was cleaning houses. I had nowhere to stay. Like it was just so hard. And one of the mindset techniques that I think is so powerful is that you have to not only, you know, talk as if you already have it, but you also have to make it part of your identity.
Yeah.
So for example, there's some people that say, well, I want to be a writer. I was like, no, you have to say that you're a writer. Like you have to say, I'm a writer. And then when you say I'm a writer, then you're going to look for behaviors that match that identity.
Yeah. Wow, a small shift like that makes a big difference, right?
Yes. When I was writing my book, like right now I'm writing a book called Leadership is a Responsibility. And one of the exercises that, like I'm in this community where we like write the book together and everything. One of the exercises that they had us do was that we had to put in our LinkedIn profile, in our Instagram and everything, one of the three identities that we have is author. And everybody was like, well, how am I going to call myself an author if the book is not published yet? And they said, no, you can't wait for the book to be published in order for you to call yourself an author. You are writing the book right now. So you are an author because you're writing. So that small shift of putting in my LinkedIn profile, I'm an author, like all of a sudden, like I feel like I'm part of this community of people that write and I'm part of the community of people that publish, and the behavior just changes, the interaction changes. So if you are dreaming or if you are wanting to be something in the future, you have to adopt it as part of your identity.
Yeah, like if you want to manager job. You don't wait till you become the manager to get the job. You act like the manager before you get the position.
You have to exert influence. You have to lead from where you are.
Lead from where you are. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. So where do you currently live now?
I'm in Miami.
Miami. We have another connection. My father's been living in Miami since I was 8.
Really?
And I lived in Miami for 2-3 years. So, you know, the cafecito and the what's those things called with the...
La Bodega, A Street.
No, it's croquetas.
La croqueta.
Oh, my God.
And I go to the Dominican neighborhood all the time.
I have family in the Dominican neighborhood. What part do you stay in now?
No, I'm now closer to South Miami and Coral Gables. Close to Coral Gables. Yeah, I used to work in Coral Gables. University of Miami is in Coral Gables.
Oh, it is in Coral Gables.
Yes, but I used to live in Alapada.
Alapada. That's where the Dominicans is at, right? Oh, that's where we go to. We used to go there, I think, to get the truck. You know the truck, the chimney truck? They had trucks over there?
Behind Studio 60, yeah.
Yeah, around there, huh?
No, I'm from the, I know the hood.
Well, my father, I lived in Kendall for a while. It was a great experience, especially coming. I'm from Brooklyn. I went from Brooklyn to Miami, and it was getting better in Brooklyn, but it still wasn't like how it is now. And then I moved to Kendall, and it was a great experience. I can't lie, the weather, just everything, the food, the people. My Spanish got better. Like, I'm not a great Spanish speaker. My Spanish, I was talking Spanish on a regular. I felt so good to finally be able to talk so much Spanish. And it was, you know, it was okay. And I want that leads me to a question. You got your master's and your doctor over there in the most distracting place in the world, and your bachelor's, everything, and the most distracting place in the world. How was that experience for you?
Distraction place in the world because Miami is just so vibrant,
So I remember I was, the thing about me is that when I was in Miami and I was 17, and I think I shared already that I was homeless at one point, right?
Yeah.
You don't have the luxury to be distracted.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, some people like talk about, I know that Miami is very like, it can get very distracting, but you know, when you know that you have to go somewhere and you're very focused on it, you know, you kind of deal with the distraction a little bit better. Because what are you going to do? Like, if I had the luxury of being distracted, I wouldn't finish my degrees. Like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it because that was my way out of poverty, at least in my mind.
That's a strong reason to be able to block everything out and go forward.
Exactly. So I feel like I grew up faster than I should have because I was 17 and 18, but I was already thinking like ahead of my days, ahead of my years.
Yeah.
Because by the time I finished my bachelor's, I had gone through so much that I couldn't relate a lot with people my age when I was speaking to them. Relate with people that were older. And I ended up marrying somebody who was older than me because I just couldn't. Like, I remember, you know, talking to people that were my age or talking to people that were 20, 21, and they were complaining about this and about that. And I was like, I have no time for it. Like, you can't.
They used to be like, muy chévere, mírala.
You have to put on, like, your big person pants and go do it. Like, that was my mindset. Because... you know, if I didn't work, I wasn't going to be able to eat.
Yeah, you want to eat, you got to work.
You got to work
on something, yeah.
So, you know, we don't talk about this a lot, but, you know, a lot of these things, I'm not saying that if you're rich and if you have a lot of things available to you, you don't go through hard times. Of course, you know, tragedies happen to a lot of people. I've met people that, you know, lose a family member, people that go through a lot of struggle, and sometimes they have a lot of money, a lot of things available to them. But there is a certain things that happen to you when you come from a very poor background that you can't stop. You just have to keep going, because if you stop going, you lose everything. So I don't have the luxury of like, oh, let me just sit here and get distracted, or let me sit here and you know, wait for this to pass. I'm like, wait for this to pass means I'm not eating for a whole week.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, things like that, they make your character stronger. It matures you a lot. I'm sorry you had to go through that. I know someone that went through something similar, and they're super strong. So is that what led you to getting into the leadership field? Like being, going through that, you like, you know what, I'm going to take the lead and I'm going to make sure nobody else goes through this. I'm going to make sure to help people find their, you know, their boss potential.
So that was a funny story how I ended up in business. So first, when I was in the DR, in the Dominican Republic, my family there had like a business, a small business, very uh-huh. small business. And I was like this person who used to lead the office, and I'm like 13, 14 years old. I had always had an affinity for business, always, always, always. But I was always afraid to embark in a business because that business ended up being bankrupt at the end when I left. Then I decided, because I've always been like a teacher, I've always liked to be, I was always a tutor. I was always like this person who will buy a board and just teach people. I used to be a tutor for college students while I was going to college. That was how I used to make money on the side.
That's awesome.
I will be like, I'll prepare you for any test, math, everything. I just love to study. I graduated with honors. So
I would have copied off you.
Oh, I would have let you. I'm very particular about my work. I'm like, this is my work. But what happened was that I wanted to become a mathematician first. I wanted to learn, teach math. And I like numbers. And I just love to study. So when I went through that, I did my associate's in math. And then, in order for me to get my bachelor's in math, I had to take calculus.
Se acabó el party.
Entonces, calculus was tough. I mean, when I was taking calculus, you had to dedicate like extra amount of hours in calculus. And I was like, I need to go to work. I can't just like sit and like try to understand these concepts like in 4 or 5 hours. I can't do this. So I tried to do it. I just decided, you know what? I've always loved business. So I went and did my bachelor's in supervision and management. That was another thing that I was passionate about. And then I went to get my MBA. I tried to get an MBA as part of my, when I went to get my MBA, I was working at the University of Miami as a staff. And part of their programs for staff is that you could go and get your master's degree. And when you get your master's degree, you pay like an amount for the master, not the whole master's. Mm-hmm. But then I noticed that I couldn't do my MBA. So they was like, what can I do? So they, because supposedly they wouldn't do that program for the MBA program. There were some programs that were restricted. And they talked about leadership. So I looked at the program and I said to myself, well, I've always loved leadership. I was always leading my classroom. I was always leading a dance group, a tutor group. I was always leading. I always liked to lead.
Did you sit in the front? Did you always sit in the front?
I always sat in the front.
That's an example. They always say the person that sits in the front is serious.
So I always sat in the front. I always showed up early. I was the last one to leave the class. I was always asking questions to the professor. I was always like, you know, on top of my game when it came to my class. So I said, you know, I've always loved leadership, so let me do this. So I went into leadership with such a love for leadership because I always admired these people that, you know, became leaders in society. Like I used to look back in, you know, La Hermana Mirabal. From the DR, so the three sisters, the Mirabal sisters in the DR, that they were able to, you know, lead a whole revolution, like from where they were. And I always looked at Nelson Mandela and all of these people that just became leaders. I used to look up to these people and say, look, you have to have this courage and this grit and this power to make this happen. So really liked the field. I went into the field just wanting to learn how to be a better leader. And then once while I was doing my master's degree and I was going forward in my career, I noticed that, you know, we have a crisis in leadership. The people that are leading institutions, that are leading society, and I'm not going to say like 100% of them, but a lot of them are there for the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
they're there for their own self-interest. They're there because of status. They're there because they love to tell other people that they're leaders at XYZ organization, or because they're the president of XYZ, like country, corporation, government, and that gets them into certain circles, and that's for them. And I feel like we're missing the people that are leaders because they care about the followers, because they care about making a difference.
And that's a true leader.
Eh?
And that's a true leader.
That's a true leader. Those are true leaders that make a difference in the people that follow them. You look at Nelson Mandela, you look at people that really made a difference. I feel like we're lacking people that are like that. And that I noticed that because I went through a very hard time when I was a faculty or a lecturer, to be more specific, at the University of Miami. And, you know, I was very disappointed to see the type of leadership that they had and the people that were leading departments that were supposed to be like for management and leadership, the traits and the toxic things that they will enable people to just initiate, and there was a very toxic environment and things like that. So I just, a lot of wrong people. So I just had a feeling the more I worked and the more I saw injustices, not only at work, but in society, that I thought that, you know, we're lacking true leaders and we need to develop them and we need to increase representation and we need to open the doors to minorities and women and black women to lead too.
Yes.
Because we need those perspectives.
Give them a chance. Like, we seen the way y'all tried it and it doesn't work. Like, maybe getting a breath of fresh air and letting a woman use her nurturing, multitasking strength to kind of, you know, lead the way. You know, that would be awesome. But speaking of leaders, like, what? I wanted to get into the Nelson Mandela. He is a great example. So many years in jail and the words and the life he lived. Like, that was an incredible example. What do you think describes a good leader?
So that's a great question, because my book is called Leadership is Our Responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. And we used to use certain features that describes a good leader. We still use those type of features. Like, what makes a good leader? People say, well, they're confident and they're tall and they're outspoken and they're extroverted. But the problem is, what if you're all those things, but you're terrible to the people that you lead? Like, what if you're very confident? What if you're a tall person? What if you're somebody who's an extrovert, but behind closed doors, you're bullied to the people that you lead? Then I don't care about those features anymore.
I don't care
about the things that supposedly make you a leader. You know what makes you a leader? The people that you follow, they look at you and they think you're a good leader. So I feel like leadership needs to change. The people that follow you need to recognize you as a leader. It shouldn't come from the person patting themselves in the back and say, I'm a great leader.
Yeah, like, it shouldn't be the position. It should be the person that focuses on the people. Because if the people are in sync, everyone works together better and you get more accomplished. It would be great if that was like the standard. Usually it's, I don't know, I feel like sometimes it's who ass you can kiss the most and, you know, how much bullshit can you deal with, you know?
Yeah, there is a book that is called Why Do Incompetent Men Become Leaders? And you see a lot of things that people have been able to get away with to come to these leadership positions. And one of them is that they mask their competence with confidence. So they're not competent leaders, but they're very good at showing a face or a side of them that is very confident. And the problem is that we as a society, we get persuaded so easily by people that look a certain way or act a certain way or are convincing a certain way. When leadership shouldn't be a position that is achieved based on how popular you are or how great you are at speaking. Oh, you are so eloquent. Then let me give you this leadership role. Well, what if you have somebody who's not very, like, they don't speak maybe very eloquently and maybe they have an accent or maybe they, you know, maybe they're very shy, but they're great leaders. And the people that work under them, they're very happy. And that person is able to cultivate a great work environment. and the people feel like that person have changed their lives, and that makes a great leader, not the certain features and qualities that we usually see outlined in a book. That's my definition of leadership.
Yeah, actually, that's a great one. So I hope that you see that it's not about the title, man. Titles don't define us. What we do defines us. And one quality, one, you know, main trait is being able to have empathy, right? And when you're a leader and you have empathy, you can relate to others and see it from not just your perspective, but someone else's. So you think this is a fun question. You think the world's ready for a woman president? I know I'm ready for one.
Yeah, I think that the world is ready for a woman president.
Not Hillary, though.
And it was very difficult to explain effectively.
Yeah, I think we're all long overdue for a woman president.
Back with more Mundo after this commercial break.
Don't touch that dial.
Now a word from our sponsors.
What's good, y'all? Loving the episode so far? I know you are. Go to www.patreon.com/TheRaymundo Show. Sign up. It's pretty easy. Yeah, and I'll see you there. Don't just meet me there. Greet me there on some Snoop Dogg shit. But anyway, back to the show.
Subscribe now.
So what can someone listening to right now, like what can they do today to start like becoming a better leader or working on their leadership skills?
So I always say that the best thing that you can do right now is start leading the people or start with your leadership skills at home. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you have people that, you know, you are surrounded by other people. Some people have kids. Some people have, you know, their partners and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes your partner needs some motivation. Sometimes your partner needs somebody who will listen to them. And that's what leadership is, too. So how can you be a better leader for yourself and the people that are closest to you?
It starts with you.
It starts with you. It starts with you. It starts with you leading your life. Are you leading the life that you want to have? And then you can try to be leading other people. There is a saying that I love. It says, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
That's so true. That says we in the book world, a keystone habit. That you do that affects five. Like if you wake up early, you'll be more organized. You'll eat better. You'll make better decisions. You'll be more, you know, like you sleep better. Mm-hmm. You're more like when I heard that, I said, that makes so much sense. Because I always use the example. I'm like, if I can public speak, then I can speak to one person on a podcast. Like I always mix things like that. So that's crazy that you said that.
Yeah. And if you want to start with leadership, you have to lead yourself first.
Exactly. You got to be the example.
You have to lead by example. That's even with like, even with the things of empathy. Are you empathetic with yourself? Are you compassionate with yourself when you make a mistake? Because if you're very hard on yourself, you're going to be very hard on other people. So you have these things that we don't realize. It's like you affect the culture of your organization and the people around you. If you're hard on other people that live with you, it's probably because you're very hard on yourself or because there's doing something that is affecting you're insecure about yourself or something is going on. But you have to work on you. You have to develop that self-awareness and understand, if I want to become a better leader, how can I lead a better life in my house first? And then I can worry about leading other people. If you cannot lead yourself and lead the people around you or make a good difference around you, then you have no business meeting people that don't even know you.
Because I think the best compliment you can get is like people wanting to work for you and you don't even have like a position to hire them. I've had I think I'm a natural leader. That goes to my next question. Not that I'm a natural leader, but I had leadership potential because like every time I would go to a place like where I work, they would always tell me, yo, what you know, whatever you do, your work, the people that you work with do. Like I'm the boss, but they follow you. Like, I remember having that conversation.
So you have the personal power, we call it. So you have people gravitate to you because, you know, probably have the expertise or the charisma or something that make people, like, you know, follow you.
Yeah, I'm charismatic and, like, I don't judge. Like, I'll help anybody, So you being, like, you're like a master doctor in the leadership. So for people that think that leaders are born, you know what I mean? Like
I always say that's the question of the century. Everybody asks, are leaders born or they're made? Are they born or they're made? I feel like it can be both. It can be a combination of both. But I feel that true leadership is a decision. It's a decision that you make to make the lives of the people that follow you better. So whether you were born a natural leader or you were made a leader, I think at the end of the day, we are basing what true leadership means based on qualities that are that only belong to one person and not the effect that the person has on people. So I feel that true leadership is, you know, you have to have a good effect on other people and you have to make that decision. And yes, leaders can be made. And usually when we have a crisis, and we can see with Nelson Mandela, like we were just talking about that, leaders emerge during crisis. Somebody has to take the lead. Somebody has
to lead.
And that's where true leaders, that's why I will say that's when true leaders emerge.
And it doesn't have to be a worldwide crisis. It could be a crisis right in your home or in the place where it affects us all, in the mind.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, in your pursuit like to get women equal rights, equal opportunities in leadership roles, have you seen any improvement in that area?
Very, very slow.
It's slow.
Very, very slow. I think there's some women that have been able to get to top positions, but they've been able to get those top positions. Most of the women that have been able to get to top positions are white women.
Yeah.
So Afro-Latinas and Black women have it much more difficult to get to those top positions. And it's not, I don't think we've made a lot of progress. I know some people will listen to this and say, yes, we've made progress. And I'm like, women make up more than 50% of the population in the U.S.
And only like 21% are in leadership roles, right? Like around that number?
So we have more than 50% of the whole population are women. More than 50% of all bachelors, masters, and doctoral degree are held by women. But then when we look at Fortune 500 companies, only 8% of CEOs are women.
What?
How come women are part of the most educated workforce, have most of the degrees, but are not represented in leadership roles? So it's like you have all these people that are prepared, and then the more you go to the top, it's like men gets to go more to the top than women. So there is even a term that a researcher coined that's called the glass escalator.
Glass escalator.
So in fields that are usually predominantly filled by women, like education, you know, you have a lot of teachers that are women. A man can come in to that field and usually rise to the top much faster than women. And that's why it's called glass escalator. So in education, you see a lot of women are teachers. Few of them are principals. And a very, 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 very few of them are superintendents. So we still live in a system where women struggle much, much more to get to those leadership roles. And men, they can come into the workforce and rise up much faster than women.
Now, you know what's great? My girl tells me, I never knew that this term existed, that men fail forwards, I think. Men fail forward. Like, so she's in HR. She always try to help women kind of like, you know their worth, ask for this. And like, I got to see that actually firsthand. Like the way they like, you know, they offer women less money, like, and they can have the same qualities, experience, and everything as a man. It's crazy. My mind was never on that. So I didn't know that was a thing. Because I just feel like at this point, we should be past that already.
We're not.
It's crazy, man. Like,
we're not. I mean, you know, it's terrible. I mean, we have to make some changes. I know that we're still fighting to make those changes. We're still going out there. D&I practitioners are trying to make sure that, you know, women are represented, but we're not. We're still making sure that women are given this fair chance to move up the ladder.
What can we do, like, to help that out? Like, if someone listening, they feel, you know, motivated to do something.
So I think it all starts at home, because one of the things that women go through in the workplace is they go through a lot of stereotypes and implicit bias that starts at home. How does that start at home? For example, when kids are little, you know, boy and a girl, if a boy cries, they're like, don't cry like a girl. You're supposed to toughen up and be a boy, right? A girl is usually taught that, you know, she can cry and she's, you know, she's supposed to be emotional. And then we teach the girl to care, like, you know, caring qualities. And then we teach the boy to build things, to lead things.
Starts from early.
Starts very early. So what happens?
Crazy.
Then based on those teachings, the boys gravitate to sports and leading and kicking and being assertive and yelling and confident. And then women are more, let me be quiet, cross my legs. Let's make sure that I'm quiet, that I don't speak up. And then, you know, fast forward, then you have people that don't negotiate salary and people that are very into negotiating their salary.
Yeah.
Because the confidence is there, right? So a lot of the behaviors that we have that, you know, some people say, well, this is why they don't get paid enough because they don't negotiate. Well, society has socialize us to be quiet and to be reserved and to be a certain way. So it starts at home. It's so good. If you have a girl, I would be like, teach her to be confident too and to speak up and to be assertive and to have those qualities. Like we have put gender, we have genderfied qualities. That shouldn't be like being assertive is not a boy quality or a girl's quality. It's just that's being so assertive. True.
Man, that's being crazy. I've never heard that. Gentrified qualities. That's insane.
Yes. And there's even this thing called gender stratification. It's a lot of things that we've done in society to put genders around things. And then what happens is women are expected to be quiet and to not raise their voice and to not ask for the raise. And then when they do ask for the raise and they're not quiet, then they're treated badly because they're violating their gender norms. So it's very bad. So it starts in socialization. And I will say for boys, if they want to cry, let them cry. Crying is not a girl thing or a boy thing. Yeah. And confidence is not a boy thing or a girl thing. It's just...
I cried last night. I said, I cried last night.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, we cannot be shaming boys or girls for what they do or putting genders into what they do because then we grow up in these boxes. And then it's very hard to separate yourself from those boxes when you're in corporate America, but it's society has to change in general.
So something happened to you in particular that made you want to be an advocate for women?
Yes. So what happened to me was that I followed the rules. I went and got my master's. I got my doctoral degree. I did high performing. I did everything the prescription to become successful, right? Mm-hmm. And then I still was discriminated at my work. At my job, I was discriminated. What I felt and what a lot of Black women has felt is that for some reason, the first thing that sometimes people see when it comes to promotion and giving the opportunities is your color and your gender. And when somebody else, that sometimes they're males and they want to get, you know, promoted and things like that, they look at their performance. Oh, you have a good performance. You're very good with people. Let me promote you. But then for women, it tends to be a little bit different. So when I started writing my book and I started interviewing more women, especially Afro-Latinas and Black women, it looks like my story is very similar to a lot of women out there. So I will release the book in January and I will talk about their stories. And I've interviewed people from different companies, IBM, Meta, Amazon, like higher education, Black women. And they felt the same. They felt like they've been stopped in their career, that it had nothing to do with their performance, that it had to do with how they look. And they never had anybody, let's say in those companies, never had somebody. And I'm not talking about a particular company here. So if you're Amazon or any of these companies listening to me, it's not about you.
I'm talking about you.
But some of these companies, what happened was that their representation wasn't there. And because the representation wasn't there, they felt like they were stopped or they had more to prove in order for them to get equal footing than a guy. So I feel like, you know, I've been interviewing a lot of people. It happened to me too. And it's still there in society. So that makes me a huge advocate. And in the Dominican Republic, in the Latino community, a lot of people that represent our community out there, they're usually light Latinos. Not Black Latinos.
I noticed that too. Like, what's up? What we got a face too. Like, we can...
Exactly. So, you watch the movie In the Heights. They're supposed to be representative of the Dominican community, which the majority looks like an Afro-Latinos. They had as a lead, a white Latino who was like from Puerto Rico. And I'm like, well, we're here. Like, we exist. So I see it in movies. I see it in the workplace. And I think that we need to increase our representation.
Yeah, I think it would be great, man. Because then, since it starts from when we're younger, those kids can see that, yo, you know what? Damn, it doesn't matter what my gender or my races, we all people at the end of the day. That's why I don't get like regardless the height, shade, whatever you are, you're a human. Your blood is red. You have skin. You have features. I will never get how we even got here, but that's another story.
Like then we have to talk about slavery and everything else.
Yeah, that goes. Okay, so are you still a coach at TED Talk? I mean, at TEDx.
Well, I was a TEDx speaker, so I don't coach for TEDx, but I did a TEDx.
How would you sum up that experience in a few words.
So it was a very interesting experience. You know, you have to go through a lot of, you have to go through audition. You have to go and make sure that you have a speech that is compelling, that is associated with a theme. And then you have to practice a lot. And I feel like I practiced so much. And at the end, I was still nervous. Because, you know, you're there doing a TEDx speech. So in my mind, I was like, oh, my God, I'm doing this thing that is so big. But, yeah. You know, it's a lot of experience. And at the end of the day, you know, you can be nervous the last day. So you cannot expect that, you know, you just like the nervousness is going to go out. You just have to decide to do it anyway.
How could you get qualified? Is there like a requirement?
So you apply. The one that I was doing right now for that is particular. That was in an institution. But it depends. You have to go online and you have to look at, if you go to TED.com, you'll be able to see different locations where TEDx conferences are held. And then each location will have like their own requirements for you to apply and be selected.
Okay. My dream is to give a TED talk how I went from the streets of Brooklyn to a depressed, anxiety-filled, you know, not sure of himself boy to a father, grown man, worldwide podcaster, author, voice actor, actor. I want to do a lot. I was going to say, yo quiero ser demasiado.
So go to TED and look for one conference or one TEDx that is around your area and just apply. You just have to apply. Don't just lay back, like just go and do it.
All right. So what role does fear play in your life?
Oh, fear is with me at all times. I'm a scary cat sometimes.
Look at that. And you give speeches, you teach people, you train.
Because fear is with me, but that fear doesn't determine what I'm going to do or not going to do. Yes. It's like he's there with me. Like I'm somebody who gets scared. Like I'm a person who's like, I grew up being scared about everything. And the fear hasn't gone away, but I just have to, like, what am I going to do? Stop living? I'm just going to take my fear with me, put it in my backpack and keep going.
Okay. What do you do to take care of your mental health?
What do I do to take care of my mental health? I practice a lot of meditation. Meditation is great. And nice. When you're in the coaching industry, you learn so many techniques to like reframe your thoughts. I do a lot of self-awareness. I do a lot of digging. Like whenever I feel bad, I'm like, where is this coming from? Is this a pattern? Is this a limiting belief? Where did I get this from? Let me just go right now and challenge that belief system. That's not my belief system. That was like an aunt that lost her business and I don't have to like live with that. So I do a lot of like work internally.
See, and that lets you see that the questions that you're looking for, you have the answers. You just have to give yourself time to think. So with everything you're doing, continuously improving, what does the future hold for Dr. Marisol?
I don't know, but I'm excited to find out.
And what do you hope to accomplish? Like when it's all said and done, what you...
So one of the things that I want to accomplish, I want to do things related to the empowerment of women, Afro-Latinas too. And also I would love to do something for kids. I've always been passionate about kids, especially kids that are don't have any family, that are in foster care, kids that are neglected, kids that are... They don't have, you know, anybody to look after them. After I went through homelessness, I was like, you know, how many kids out there are struggling?
I know, man. It's so sad. Like,
so I wish that I can do that. Whatever I accomplish in the future gives me the opportunity to change the lives of many kids.
Hold on. That's awesome. The kids are the future. Like, it starts with them. If we start with them and we're serious about it, things are changed in the present and in the future. You have this book. When could listeners expect this book?
So my book is going to come out on January 2023. But the pre-sale is going to start, I believe, in August. So if you want to peek into the book and then you want to also participate of my pre-launching campaign and speeches and things like that, it will happen in August.
August. All right. Cool. Summertime.
Yeah.
It's going to be hot this summer. I said, got a lot.
Yes. For sure.
Now, last question. Where could my listeners that I'm pretty sure love the things you said and want to hear more, where could they go?
So they could go to LinkedIn and then they'll find me at Marisol Capellan. So Dr. Marisol Capellan.
Yeah, don't forget that one.
And don't forget that one. And you'll see that I'm the one who, as an employer, has the Capellan Institute, which is an institute for coaching certificates. So if you want to get your coaching certificates, I'm going to have my first cohort in August. So very excited about that. And then I will also on Instagram at Prof Capellan, P-R-O-F Capellan. And yes, you can find me on those two things, either LinkedIn or Instagram. Instagram, I post in Spanish, and then in LinkedIn, I post in English and Spanish. But I'm, you know, I'm out there. I have a Woman in Leadership newsletter where I post about women and in leadership position in LinkedIn. So you're more than welcome to follow me there. And I have a podcast in Spanish.
La Mujer CEO.
And I bring women with very inspirational stories to talk about how they found their leader within.
Oh, man. I don't know. I saw a video where you had the background. It was the colors. I don't know. The colors was just so... It was great. I don't know. I was watching some clips and I was like, damn, that's a nice background.
I'm gonna take those
colors for myself. I want to thank you for being on the Raymundo Show. It was great to have you. I would like to have you back again, but we can have a full hour.
Yes.
You know, internet free. But, you know, I want to thank you and I appreciate you, the things you're doing, you know, for your family and for women, minorities, anybody who been programmed to think that they don't have a voice. You know, you're letting them know, like, it doesn't have to be that way. And if I got to be the one to talk first and lead the way, then why not? And we need more of us to do that, because the more we do that, the more we can make that change that we really need to live in a better society. And Dr. Marisol went from being homeless to, she just told you about her institute. So your mind limits you, but your belief and your actions can make all the difference. But I said all of that just to say it was great to have you. And we wish you, at the Raymundo Show, we wish you all the best of luck in everything you do. Get that book, Leadership is a Responsibility, and with great... they said with great power comes with great responsibility, but with great responsibility comes great power.
Yes, thank you so much for having me here. It was a pleasure.
No problem. Take care. Mm-hmm.
It's just time for that action.
I'm always trying to figure out a way to make my show better. I would really appreciate your feedback. Always feel free to email me at mundo@theraymundoshow.com. Follow me on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, @theraymundoshow.com. I'm really trying to make this show the best it can be. Again, some love from my listeners will be greatly appreciated with feedback and donations. I would really love for y'all to be part of this history I'm about to make in every way possible. PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, and anywhere money and help is accepted, just type The Raymundo Show and I'll pop up. I want to thank y'all. Love y'all. Peace, love. Mundo.
Subscribe now.
Raymundo's final say.
Before you lead, you must be led. I know you heard that shit before. Before you try to feed anyone else, you must be fed. But first, you must learn how to govern yourself. Because there are times in life where help isn't available and you have to save yourself, like Bruce Willis did in Looper. You don't need access to a gun to be a straight shooter, especially if you want people to follow you like a PI. You see, I notice empathy is ingrained in a true leader, whose energy tells you the whole story before a word is even spoken, whose position is defined by actions matching words, and understanding that winning the MVP doesn't guarantee a championship. Putting your teammates in situations to excel like a point guard, where your strengths can make it easier to score. Now that's what the fuck I'm talking about, some Jason Kidd shit here. You ain't gotta be a manager, you just have to manage taking the lead in your life. Cause if you don't, you'll just fall for anything. For yourself, you gotta take a stand. Have your own national anthem. Oh, say can you see that the leader you could be starts at home, and from there you can take it anywhere, even from your underwear, your pantaloncillos. Yo, but this was a great episode. It made me want to take a stand, lead the way, you know what I'm saying? Be the sensei, become the sensei. I want to thank Dr. Marisol for coming on the show and giving us that wisdom, that energy. You know, and she's from my, you know, my home country, Santo Domingo. Yeah, man, but Whether this is your first time listening or you a regular Mundo listener, I want to thank you for tuning in. You know what I'm saying? The episodes are coming every week, man. Little by little, everything's coming together. I'm just trying to get out of my own way. But till next time, be safe. Peace. Love. Mundo. Out.